Well, thank you so much for joining us, Carl, to talk about this really important and timely topic. And could you start by introducing yourself and describing your work at the HIV and Hepatitis Policy Institute?
Sure, it's great to be here too. I'm Executive Director of the HIV and Hepatitis Policy Institute, and we're a policy and advocacy organization based in Washington, D.C., that works mostly on domestic HIV and hepatitis issues. And I'm also a person living with chronic hepatitis B. So this issue is personally very important to me.
And just generally to start us off, do you, either yourself or the Policy Institute, have any goals for this World Hepatitis Day?
There's a lot of health issues going on our world right now. But I think it's really important to for the world, not in the United States and the rest of the world, to pause and to recognize that we still have, hundreds of millions of people with hepatitis right now. It's an infectious disease, just like HIV, COVID, now monkeypox. People can die from it. And we really need to call attention to the 350 million people living with hepatitis, that every 30 seconds, someone in the world is dying of hepatitis. And the sad thing is, people don't know about it. People don't even know. 9 out of 10 people living with hepatitis around the world don't even know they have hepatitis, and they need to be tested. And if they're tested and found to be living with hepatitis, they can be treated. And also, there's ways we can prevent hepatitis as well, which we'll talk about. But it's a really a time for the whole world to recognize that we still have people call it a silent killer, because people don't know that they have it, it really can lead to death if it's left untreated.
And then, could you briefly outline the different kinds of viral
I'm not a doctor, but
hepatitis?
I'm going to do the best I can. There's around 5 different types of viral hepatitis. Hepatitis A is probably one that people are most familiar with, and that's not chronic. And that's caused by unsanitary conditions like water or food. And it is preventable by vaccine and also treatable. But it can lead to death if it's not controlled. And so, you see it in a lot of lower income countries, but also you see it in amongst homeless people, or where there's unsanitary conditions in an outbreak of a food situation coming from a certain farm or something like that. And then there's hepatitis B, and that's what I have. And it's not always chronic. Actually, most people who contract the virus clear the virus on their own. They develop the antibodies. And this is, there's hundreds of millions of people around the world with hepatitis B, a lot of them in Asia, in Africa. Here in the United States, it's I'm a gay man. You can contract it through sex. It's bloodborne. It's also perinatal, mother to child, and that's where you see a lot of the cases these days. And you're seeing more and more because of injection drug use, and we can talk about more of that as well because of the opioid epidemic. Then I'll skip to hepatitis D because that's kind of new, and that's you have to have hepatitis B, as in boy, to have D, which is David. And it's a smaller group of people, but it's very dangerous when you have both hepatitis B and D. And there is treatment now coming out for hepatitis D, hopefully this year in the United States. Hepatitis C is also prominent in the United States and around the world. It's bloodborne. And so we're seeing that more and more through injection drug use, growing now because of the opioid epidemic. Also, tattoos, That is chronic as well. And there is no vaccine, but there is treatment for it and a cure, and which is just amazing. So those are the main types of hepatitis and how it's spread.
Well, thank you so much for that really comprehensive overview. And then are you able to talk a bit about current infection rates and mortalities for viral hepatitis?
I will say we're seeing increases in the rates of B and C in the United States, even though we have vaccines, even though we have treatments, even though we have cures. We're seeing more and more people being infected, and the rates are going up. So it's mainly because of injection drug use and the opioid epidemic. So instead of going in the right direction, we're going in the wrong direction.
Mm. And what kind of threat does hepatitis pose to the US and then to the world at large?
Yeah. Well, you know, they're all infectious diseases. And so as I described, they're spread different ways, and they could lead to death if not treated and found early. People develop cirrhosis of the liver, which is a hardening of the liver. They also, both hepatitis B and C, when it's not controlled and treated, can lead to liver cancer as well. It's one of the leading causes of liver cancer these days. So, which can then lead to death. So these are serious, health conditions. And they're infectious, but we do know ways to prevent and treat them if, you know, the government steps in and helps.
You mentioned the opioid crisis a little bit, but could you delve more into the populations that are disproportionately affected by hepatitis?
Yeah, well, with A, could be homeless people. That's where we've seen some of the outbreaks that, you know, have gotten a lot of attention, like in Los Angeles. In the Midwest and South, in Florida. But, you know, for B, as I said earlier, a lot of the Asian community has it, and it's also spread, perinatally from mother to child. But we're seeing more and more people who are injection drug users because of the opioid epidemic. People may, move on to injecting drugs. And say for hepatitis, for example, the most prevalent community impacted were people born between 1945 and 1965. Those are the baby boomers. But now, if you look at, and it was mostly male. And now, if you look at it, it's more and more younger people. And more female. It used to be, I think, like 75-25, and now it's like 50-50, that we're seeing more and more younger people and more women who are contracting hepatitis C. As I said earlier, unfortunately, we're going in the wrong direction. We're seeing, because of the increase of opioids and injection drug use, we're seeing more and more people who have hepatitis, both B and C.
And can you talk about the stigma or bias that still persists around hepatitis and maybe the groups that are most disproportionately affected by hepatitis?
Yeah, like HIV, there's so much stigma still. We'll talk about hepatitis B and the Asian community. A lot of people, feel shame and they don't talk about it. And that's one reason why, a lot of people don't know about it. People may die without others knowing why. But we really have to raise awareness, particularly in that community. And because there is so much stigma and it's unnecessary, it's unwarranted. But I think a lot of it has to do with shame. It's an infectious disease, and they passed it on to their children. A lot of it is in the immigrant community as well. And they may not be seeking or afraid to seek healthcare because their documentation status. There's a lot of stigma. I remember when I first came out with saying that I had hepatitis B many, many years ago, People didn't want to talk about it, and they were like afraid to you know, even my family, you know, when I would go home, could we use our tooth, you know, could you, you know, toothpaste, toothbrush, is it gonna, you know, what about food plates? Can we use the same one? Is it infectious? That, and you know, and there's just a lot of disinformation. And then injection drug use, all the, you know, stigma that is associated with that and drug use and why people engage in those activities and the lack of understanding and people don't want to talk about it. So I think those are the big areas of stigma associated with hepatitis these days. Mm-hmm.
And then going off of that, how do you get the proper messaging and treatment to these populations that are most impacted without adding to this stigma?
Yeah, well, that's why we have recommendations by the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force to test people. And for providers that people should be tested before, like for hepatitis C, it was only people at risk. And how do you know, how does a provider know if someone is at risk or not? You have to ask them a lot of questions. But we were pleased a couple of years ago, they changed that recommendation and it was also certain people of a certain age, but they changed that every adult and adolescent between the ages of 18 and 79 should be tested. So I think that helps with you know, getting over the stigma in talking about it. Hepatitis B, you know, the recommendation does talk about people at increased risk, but for vaccination, they changed that as well. It used to, well, as you know, all people at birth should be vaccinated for hepatitis B. But what about the people who haven't been vaccinated? It used to be those who were at risk. And now the recommendation by the federal government is that everyone between the ages of 19 and 59 who haven't been vaccinated for hepatitis B should be vaccinated. So, you know, I think that's one of the, these are some of the ways to reduce the stigma and to have providers talk about these, infectious diseases by making it more of a part of your routine care and treatment. And then for treatment, you know, you have to, before there's any treatment, you have to be tested. And so it all comes down to testing. And so that's why these recommendations are so important. And then, you know, if you have hepatitis B, you should be on treatment. And if you have hepatitis C, again, you should be on treatment, but unlike B, where it's the rest of your life, for C, it's a pill for 8 to 12 weeks and almost everyone gets cured. So those are the keys. And I hope that someday, or soon, we're going to have a cure for hepatitis B, because I'm still looking for that.
And then what other prevention and treatment options exist for the different kinds of viral hepatitis?
Yeah, well, I already talked about B and C, that there's drugs, and A as well. And D has been approved. A treatment for D has been approved in Europe. And I think there's a drug before the FDA right now for the first treatment for hepatitis D. But we also have vaccination recommendations. And so everyone, as I said, should be vaccinated for B and then also for A as well. And that should come at, you know, birth. And if people don't get those at, you know, at birth, both A and B, then they should get them, you know, as soon as they can.
And what policies and programs currently exist to end viral hepatitis in the U.S.?
That's a great question. And you know, the WHO has declared at the global level that we can and should end hepatitis by the year 2030. And the US government has stepped up to the plate and agreed with that. And now for the first time in the last couple of years, The Department of Health and Human Services has issued the first ever elimination plan to end hepatitis in the United States. So having that document, which is now being implemented, that calls for increased prevention, increased vaccination, increased treatment, increased awareness, reducing stigma around hepatitis is really, really important. So it's great to have that, but then it takes resources and leadership to get it done, both at the federal level, but also at the state and local levels as well. And, you know, I think we're lacking in the resources, unfortunately, to implement the strategic plan. And but as I said, there's some other policies as well to have those recommendations by the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force and others in the CDC regarding screening. Regarding vaccinations, those are important policies as well. And then, you know, I'm talking about a lot of the increase in hepatitis these days is among drug users, and particularly injection drug users. And having syringe service programs are extremely critical in stopping the further spread of hepatitis and HIV to people. So, you know, there's been some pushback in certain communities and also at the national level regarding syringe service programs, but they're extremely critical. And I'm pleased that the Biden administration is, you know, supporting them and to make sure that all tools are at people's disposal to end, further infections of both hepatitis and HIV amongst those who inject drugs. So those are some of the policies and programs out there. The CDC funds with the limited amount of money, it's around $40 million for the whole country, they fund hepatitis programs throughout the country. It's not a lot of money once you split it up between all the jurisdictions to do awareness, we don't even have enough money to do proper surveillance of hepatitis. The numbers that you hear, estimates of how many people have hepatitis in the United States are not really that accurate. They're just estimates because we don't have a good surveillance system. When, of course, we know surveillance is so important for infectious diseases and HIV and COVID, but we don't even have enough money to do proper surveillance, let alone testing, let alone education, and then linkage to care and treatment for people with hepatitis. So we have a long ways to go to meet the goals.
Going off of that point, you've alluded to some of them already, but what steps still need taken in the fight against hepatitis?
We need more resources. As I said, $40 million is not a lot of money once you divide it amongst the entire United States. One benefit of the focus on HIV in recent years and the level of funding for HIV, and there's also efforts to end HIV and STDs as well as hepatitis in the country, is that the administration is taking a syndemic approach. So if you're being tested, right, for hepatitis or HIV, why don't you be tested for the other at the same time? Syringe service programs, as I said, can help prevent HIV and hepatitis. And so we can leverage the dollars, like from HIV, and do work on hepatitis as well, though we still need specific hepatitis funding as well. But we need more resources. We need more leadership and attention. I'm glad that the President Biden and his budget proposal increased the funding for hepatitis this year. It's not enough, but the House has put in the request for that amount. And now we're waiting for the Senate to act as well. But it's good to see, I think it's around $13.5 million increase. It's not enough, but we need more. Also syringe service programs, they're strapped, with their funding as well. So I would say, more leadership, more funding, particularly for the CDC. And then there's always a need for more research. As I said, we need better treatments for and a cure for hepatitis B and for D as well.
And then what do you wish clinicians and then the general public knew about hepatitis?
Well, that hepatitis is still here. And yes, there's other infectious diseases as well, but you know, there's still many, many people in the United States who have undiagnosed hepatitis. They need to be tested. They should be followed for to the recommendations for people to be screened. They also should be vaccinated, and they should also be linked to care and treatment if they find. And it's not difficult. I'm not a doctor, but you know, there was a time when people with hepatitis had to be treated by specialists, and that's no longer the case. The treatment is become universal because there's different genotypes of hepatitis C, and certain drugs work with certain genotypes. But now there's pan genotype drugs, and so it's a lot easier. And also, we're finding that some people may say, "Oh, this person shouldn't be treated. They can't adhere to the recommendations for you know, for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, or whatever, 8 weeks, and because they use drugs." But we're finding that that's not true, and that people do adhere to their medications. And so I would just, you know, remind clinicians that of the recommendations, and that hepatitis is still very prevalent in the United States. Everyone should be vaccinated, and they should be tested as well.
And then are there any specific programs or work that the HIV and Hepatitis Policy Institute is currently doing that you wanted to highlight today?
Well, right now we're working with the Congress to make sure that they adequately fund the viral hepatitis program at the CDC. And we're also working with the administration. I talked about the strategic plan to end hepatitis, but now we have the implementation plan, and, you know, just making sure that they're implementing. And you know, one of the barriers that I didn't talk about is that state Medicaid programs have put barriers on the access to hepatitis C curative drugs. And so they either say you have to have a certain degree of illness, which is really not good because you don't want people to progress in their cirrhosis level before you get treated, or it has to be by a certain special provider, or you have to be you know, abstinent of all drugs and other substances. And they're really barriers, treatment to cure barriers. And so that's another issue that we're working on, is making sure that those state Medicaid programs reduce those barriers, get rid of them. They're illegal, and they should be making sure that people get their drugs, that their prescriber prescribes, and be cured. This is an infectious disease, remarkably, that can be cured. So those are some of the issues that we're working on right now.
Well, thank you so much for really just delving into this topic with us and for sharing your own story as well.
Yeah, you know, my life with hepatitis hasn't always been easy. I won't go into all the details, but I wasn't always the chipper, happy person I am today, and was really sick. And but thanks to new medications, and I've been on many medications because I built up resistance to them over the years. And but right now I can't complain. Yes, I have to take a drug every day, but thank God I'm a healthy individual today because of those advancements. And I still want to get cured though.
Yes. Well, let's hope that you get the resources and the funding that's needed to make that happen.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
What infectious disease disparities do you want covered next? We want to hear from you, so please feel free to send feedback to me at ncosdon@mjhlifesciences.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Contagion Community.